Tiddhava.
Tati Tava.
Surarulu.
Seridhava.
Seridhava.
Tamburi.
Tamburi.
Nitidhava.
Nitidhava.
Bhavati Tati Tava.
Tiddhava.
Surarulu.
Surarulu.
Seridhava.
Seridhava.
Nice. Is that a new one?
Huh?
Is that a new one? So nice, beautiful. From what I understand of samadhi, of samadhi experiences, there is still always a vritti there. But in nirvikalpa samadhi, there is total absorption between the subject and the object, question mark. If I am meditating on my own being totally absorbed, is that still nirvikalpa samadhi? If there has been Vedantic teaching earlier, can the I notion shift during such an experience? Please talk about the difference between viveka and jnana. I guess being able to discriminate between nitya and anitya is not enough to make the ahankara shift to land on what is nitya. Okay, let's do the first part. So when we use the word samadhi, that word has application in other philosophical traditions such as Sankhya Yoga, things like that. There is such a thing that, and so Sankhya Yoga might deal with the idea of samadhi a little bit differently. Also the Ashtanga Yoga, the eight steps, samadhi being the last one in the Ashtanga Yoga. The purpose of it is maybe perhaps something different. So I guess I'm going to leave that aside for now. In our tradition, Swamiji will make use of two terms, the samadhi and jada samadhi. Jada means inert. So what we mean by the jada samadhi is that you are simply having an experience. It's an experience that could be caused just simply by doing pranayama. It could be caused by walking in nature, or just by a moment of happiness that comes into a very deep resolution, where there's just a sense of one being, of oneness. It's called jada. Those are called jada samadhi because there's no knowledge involved. And what that would mean is that you have an experience, a wonderful experience. But when you come back from the experience, you certainly remember the experience and you know that somehow it was the truth, but you don't really know what it is. And also in that type of jada samadhi, there is not a resolution of the ahankara, the I notion. So the I notion still remains with the mind, with that chitchaya, that sambandha that we've been talking about, the tadatmya, the identification, you know, of the self with the reflection of consciousness in the mind, etc. So that's that ahankara, where the mind, and because the mind is sattva, there's a reflection of consciousness in it, and that identity is what we really call the ahankara. And so when you have an experience of samadhi, which means the mind, I'll talk about the ins and outs of that experience in a minute, but when you have that experience of complete resolution where there's no subject-object relationship, there's just simply the shining of conscious being. When that experience, which is a temporary experience, right, because it's an experience of the mind, a resolution, deep resolution into the self of the mind, when you come out of that experience, nothing has happened to the ahankara. I am still the mind. I am still the conscious mind who has now had this wonderful non-dual experience. And I would like to have it again. So what happens there is that the ahamkara, or the identity of myself and the mind, remains absolutely untouched. And then I, this jiva, this one who is this mind, this conscious mind indwelling this body, this person, then knows that that experience is very significant, that it rings absolutely true, but what I don't know is that that is me. Right? It's a wonderful experience, and I can identify with it and think it's so absolutely profound, and that it is God, or that it is the very truth of Ishwar. All of that rings true, even though I don't have any words to explain that to me. Still, it rings with that type of strength, but it doesn't give me self-knowledge. The ahankara still remains intact. And because of that, it's called jada samadhi. Jada samadhi means really it's a samadhi, that experience where there is no knowledge. There's only experience. And when there's no knowledge to go with that experience, then what happens is that you define that experience in many, many different ways, whatever makes sense to you. But it's not backed by any type of understanding or knowledge. So that being put aside, when we're talking in the Vedanta, when we're talking about samadhi, we can say that there are two types of samadhi to start with. Savikalpa samadhi and nirvikalpa samadhi. But savikalpa means that there's still a vikalpa, there's still a division, there's still a sense of subject-object in the savikalpa samadhi. And so let me just kind of explain in terms of experientially what happens in savikalpa, which will then can turn into nirvikalpa. What happens is that as your mind is turning inward toward the self, even as we're doing in meditation, where we're saying, you know, gently focus on just your own presence, be with your own presence. You know, we can use pranayama and various things, yoga, to really put the body and the prana into a condition where it can get a very, very deep absorption. So say the mind is able to kind of withdraw from its experiences of the world, objectifications, can withdraw from objectifications and just be with my own self, nothing else. So the mind then becomes almost like a mirror, because the content of the mind is only me, not this object or this thought or that thought. The subject matter of the mind is my own self, because the focus is only on me. So that means me, the conscious being, is illumining the mind, which has for its content only me, because its focus is on me instead of something else. Okay? But now, when that happens initially in kind of the meditative process, initially the mind, as the mind really absorbs, the mind being focused only on me, having me for its content, right? And then this consciousness is illuminating consciousness, in a sense, that the mind, because the mind stuff is focused on consciousness, so it has that for its content. And then that content is being illumined by the mind. So that's a non-dual situation there, because there's no difference between consciousness and consciousness. However, in savikalpa samadhi, the mind is still present. So the mind is still aware of itself, and it's aware of itself having the experience of me. So the mind hasn't been, in a sense, overwhelmed by my own presence. The outline of the mind is still there, even though its content is me and it's being illumined by me. Still, the mind itself, the sattva mind itself, is being cognized. So then there's a subject-object relationship, in a sense. The mind being aware of myself is the kind of the experience there. But when that experience of the mind is held for a moment or two or three, very often what happens is that the content, which is the self is illumining that mind, and the content of the mind is the self. The self overwhelms the vritti. And the vritti, the thought modification, anyway, is called atisukshma. It's very subtle. That vritti, the sattva itself, is very subtle, and it's not objectifying anything that is gross. So that mind could not be more subtle, really. And the only content of the mind is consciousness. And so if that's held for in a few moments, the mind itself will be overwhelmed by its own content and as though disappear, even though it's there. That's why when you come back from that experience, you can talk about it and remember it. Kind of like when you come back from deep sleep, which is different. That's an absorption into complete ignorance, where here it's an absorption into conscious being itself. When you come back from it, the vritti is still there because you have every memory of that experience. The example they use to try to help make the subvikalpa and nirvikalpa more clear is the example of holding a candle flame up to the sun. If I hold a candle, so the content of the candle flame, that fire, is the same as the content of the sun. But the candle flame is limited. And if I initially, when I hold it up, you may be able to discern the outline of the flame. Even though the flame and the sun are going to blend into each other, because fire, and it'd be hard to make that discrimination between the two, you know, because the sun is overwhelming the fire. But for the moment, the outline of the flame can be maintained. Right? But if you hold for more than a moment, it is very likely that the power of the sun, the radiance of the sun, will overwhelm the shape of the flame. And that is what we call nirvikalpa. If the outline of the flame is still cognizable, we call that savikalpa. So we would say savikalpa samadhi can resolve into nirvikalpa samadhi, where you wouldn't just go into nirvikalpa samadhi. That wouldn't be possible, because the mind itself has to withdraw or turn away from any objectifiable thought material, any type of objectifiable content. Right? And so when it does that, that's going to be savikalpa as it does that, but as it holds that, the nature of the self will overwhelm the outline of the mind, and you'll just be abiding as yourself until the mind, you know, kind of tumbles out of that nirvikalpa, that non-dual state. So when the mind is in that non-dual state, there is no subject-object relationship. It's just, there is just pure only me. The only experience is me. Non-dual me. There's no world, there's no thought, there's no mind, no subject-object relationship, just the pure abiding of myself. And that's what we call nirvikalpa samadhi. Di, the word di, standing for the buddhi, samadhi. Okay. That samatvam means that the mind has become completely sane, completely a deep shanti. The mind enjoys a deep shanti of oneness, of inactivity, of just pure clarity. So that's a complete absorption. So the buddhi, you know, is becoming one with, as though my own being. So that sama, that sama, that state of complete absorption into the self is samadhi. You'd have a samadhi also into it, like an upasana type of samadhi, into an object. Like say you have an Ishta Devata, Ganesha, for instance, and you're doing a contemplation, an upasana, on the form of Ganesha, the form that you worship Ganesha in. And so as you're able to do dhyanam, you know, first you want to do dharana, where you're holding the yoga, Ashtanga yoga. You do dharana. And you hold your mind on that form. You direct your mind to that form and you hold it there. As you hold it there, what we call dhyanam starts to take place, where the mind continues to just like fold into like vritti after vritti after vritti, kind of like water, like a flow of water. The vrittis themselves are just flowing into that form. And as you're able to do that dhyanam and hold that form, for a while, there comes as though samadhi experience where there is no subject-object relationship anymore, there is only Ganesha. Right? And so that's kind of a culmination of upasana, where you are Ganesha, there is only Ganesha. There's not somebody being the witness of Ganesha. There is only Ganesha. And so that's kind of a samadhi type experience in reference to an object or an Ishtadevata. It could be something else other than an Ishtadevata also. It could be the Omkara. It could be the sound of Om. It could be the symbol of Om. It could be many, many different things in which you're doing that act of concentration that then resolves into just the existence of the thing that you're concentrating on. So that's in the realm of Upasana. But when we're talking about Nididhyasana, we're talking about the resolution, if we're doing meditation and we're using a word like samadhi, we are resolving our mind just into the nature of myself. Now, as we'll see in Driksha Viveka, if this time we get that far, there are also other types of samadhi in reference to knowledge. You know, one is, for instance, when the jivatva, this body, mind, sense organs, person here, is totally resolved into Ishwara. And so, which is the state of Ajnani, really. There is only Ishwara. This body is Ishwara, this mind is Ishwara, the sense organs are Ishwara, the Atma is Ishwara, the world is Ishwara, there's nothing but Ishwara. So this body, mind, sense organs, everything that you take to be you as an individual making your way through the world, you actually recognize as all the whole thing is Ishwara. Like, for instance, if you have a dream, you can look at the dream from the standpoint of the dream character and think that the dream character is actually creating their life in the dream. But actually, you know that the life of the dream character is part of the story of the whole dream and actually belongs to the whole dream. So we come to that recognition as a jnani, you come to that recognition that the Atma, the self that you are, is the self that is Ishwara. So this Atma is Brahman, there's only Ishwara, Ishwara's self. This body, mind, sense organs, all objectifiable, belong to this creation, and so part and parcel of Ishwara. You know, that there is no separate jiva. There is really only Ishwara. And so when you become mature in that knowledge, when you have enough really vairagya. Vairagya means that, you know, dispassion, free of raga dvesha, free of the ajnana and the self-ignorance that causes you to project your happiness onto the world and then run after it. When that has matured and you're really free of all of that, you know, then you're free to just appreciate Ishwara and appreciate the tremendous wonder of having this upadhi where you can look around at yourself. It's only Ishwara here, really. This body, mind, sense organs is only Ishwara. The self is only Ishwara. And then, but you have these eyes and sense organs and you can walk around and do things in yourself. Right? Because Ishwara is an expression of your being, the Atma. Right? The Atma really is Brahman. Is the self, which is the self of the whole universe, of Ishwara. And so now, because of Ajnana, beginningless ignorance, here you are, you're having this body. You have this body because you didn't have self-knowledge. If you had self-knowledge, you wouldn't be born again in another body. Okay? You didn't have self-knowledge last night. No. Here you are. Okay. Can't do anything about it now. It's too late, as they say in Panchadashi. Sorry, son, it's too late, he says to his student. You just have to suffer whatever the Puna Papa is in this life, because here you are, until the Prarabha runs out. So anyway, that also is a type of contemplation. It's an open-eye contemplation, a closed eye, where you just, you recognize, you experience all of this, everything, including your body, mind, sense, the whole thing, its own issue. It's another type of samadhi. And we'll see that later. Take a look at this. So in both the Nirvikalpa and Savikalpa, there's still a vritti. But in the Nirvikalpa, the vritti is totally overwhelmed by the content. It's not that it's not there, it is there in both cases. But in Savikalpa, you are aware of the existence of that vritti. Right? So there's still a subject-object relationship. In Nirvikalpa, there's no experience of a subject-object relationship. If I'm meditating on my own being, totally absorbed in that, is that nirvikalpa samadhi? Yeah. If it's nirvikalpa, if the outline of the mind is not there. If the outline of the mind is still there, the recognition of the mind, the subject object, then it's satikalpa. Content is the same. In either way, the content is the Atma, is the self. The only difference is one, there's still the perception of the mind and subject object, and the other, the mind has been overwhelmed. And so the subject object relationship is inexperienced. There's been Vedantic teaching. Earlier, can the I notion shift during such an experience? Yes. If you have been exposed to this teaching to understand it conceptually, but you don't really know, you can actually, after the fact, have some sort of experience or some sort of recognition, you know, that makes for that shift of the ahankara to the aham. That can definitely happen. Swamiji uses the example for that of, he says, you know, say somebody has told you a joke, right? You're a little embarrassed, but you really didn't get it. So you smile and everything. you really didn't get the joke at all, okay? So then you go and you're taking a shower. In the shower and all the hot water, he makes a joke about being bald, all the hot water is pouring down, you know, and all of a sudden you start laughing, because all of a sudden you got it. You got it, you got the joke. And it was really funny. So you spent, but until that moment, you didn't get it. It was there, you heard it, you saw it and everything, but you just did not get it. And that happens sometimes. In fact, this happened many times for me, where the Swamiji over the years would be saying something, same thing, over and over and over, and I never really got it, you know? Even though I might have heard it 100 times. And then one day, oh, it's like that. That's what he meant. You know, it's like an after-the-fact realization. Ah, that's what he meant. Oh my gosh, I never got that all those years. So yeah. In fact, also, I think I remember for myself that when that real shift between the ahankara means that I really, being that chittabhasa, that chit-chaya, you know, where the eyes, the ahankara is still really connected to the mind somehow. At some point, it recognized and it made a shift and landed on me. Like, it would be kind of like, and then I tested it out in my own strange ways. It would be like this, that I couldn't believe it. Everything became so clear at that time. And then I tried it out. Like, say if you say I, the word. So here's this word, this vritti, I. You know, it's coming, I, okay. So this I thought comes. Where does it land? It's really interesting, kind of a meditation. When you say I, where does it land? And so then it started to land only on me. That means my self-identity is not with the chittabhasa, it's not with the mind or the body or the sense organs, it's only with me. And so there was a shift. But that shift didn't happen at the time of teaching. Of course, I had years and years and years of teaching, but that real shift happened when I was alone, actually. I was up in the mountains in Yosemite, and Swamiji, I believe, was there giving a camp. But I was out somewhere in nature, just walking along, and all of a sudden this kind of happened. I saw it, and that shift took place, and that what was ahankara now just became the aham that I was, me, the atma, the self. And then it has always been that way, ever since, in fact. Now, at the same time, and this is just what we're talking about in class now, there's that mithya ahankara. Because even when the I, the me, is your own self, is the Atma, right? There's still, from the standpoint of the body, I'm going to the store, you know, or I'm going to read this book, or I am tired, you know, or my mind is such and such. All of those experiences are there, and they're all your experiences, but they're mitya. The ahankara is just for convenience. It's not as all of a sudden, when you say, I'm going to the store, that you, the self, has become the one who's walking to the store. And at the same time, the body has a sense of me, because sattva, because of the chirabhasa, because of the chitchaya. You know, because it reflects consciousness. The mind has a sense of me. But it's so mitya because the aham lands on your own self, which is ever-present. And that's another thing. You, who you are, how you can really differentiate yourself from the reflection of consciousness in the mind or in the emotional body, whatever you want to call that, that's just part of the mind, or with the body. That's always changing. You know, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm tired, I'm this or I'm that. That sense of me is always being seen through the lens of the upadhi, of the conditioning adjunct, you know? But the me is always the same. So no matter what is going on in terms of the sattva, mind and sense organs and pervading the body, no matter what's going on there, and that's continually changing, you know, the me experience of myself is constant. And so the aham lands on me. I am always here exactly in the same way. And then I have my body doing its thing, and my mind, my body, my sense organs, because reflection of consciousness. And there, different things are happening there. But for me, nothing is ever different. Because the self is free of time, you're free of change, and yet you are dominant. Your presence is what is really dominant in the mind, once you recognize it, because there's nothing away, there's never anything away from the satchit, the conscious being that you are. So you become the constant, and your own sense of self is that constant. Yeah.
Around that?
Sure.
When you talk about when the eye motion shifted for you in Yosemite, you know how we talk about moksha not being an event? But that makes it sound kind of like an event to me.
The thing is, there's two ways of looking at it, even in the Shastra. In one way, I think it's in the Katha Upanishad, gaining clarity. Nishta means, you know, clarity or in your knowledge, is like the rising of the sun, right? So it starts at, you know, it's night out, and then the sun starts to rise. It's a little bit of light, a little bit of light, and the orb of the sun comes, and finally it rises up, and there's so complete clarity. So in your relationship with Ishwara, right? With Ishwara, that's like the sunrise, because there are so many things that need to become clear. In your relationship with your mind, that's like the sunrise, because the mind has to, it has to work through all of its issues and drop off its kind of habitual ajnana, ignorance-born behaviors and all of that. That is all taking place. It's like watching a clock move, kind of, you know, or the slowness of the sunrise. All of these things come into beautiful maturity in their own time. And your neutralization of all raga dveshas, the growth of vairagya that gives the mind much more. Vairagya is that kind of dispassion where I'm no longer asking the world to make me happy, because I've discovered that ananda to be the source of that ananda to be myself. That's like the sunrise, because the vairagya happens slowly, right? This drops off, and this drops off, and this goes on and on and on and on, until finally, there's really not much that can pull your mind out into that illusion that if I could only have this, I would be happy, or I need to have this to be happy. But that's like the sunrise. Now, the recognition of yourself, of your own being, of the Atma, is not like the sunrise, but it's tricky. It's very tricky because I think, well, there's different reasons, but one of the main reasons, I think, is because of the way we think about gaining knowledge. We think about gaining knowledge, this is one of the reasons, we think about gaining knowledge in terms of gaining an experience and then knowing the nature of that experience. It's called vritti-vyapti and pala-vyapti. It's just first I gain the experience and then I can gain knowledge of what that experience is. With the self, you're not going to gain self-knowledge that way because the self can never become an object of your knowledge to have an experience of in that same way, right? Because yourself is all, and because yourself is ever present. So the experience is not something that's going to come and go, so it all has to do with removing ignorance until that self-recognition is there. So, and there's that one of the main obstructions is you can have shantavrittis, which give you an experience of ananda, of peace, of being myself, and those shantavrittis come and go. And so then the grand illusion is, I was with myself, and then I lost it, right? So that's an obstruction. And that obstruction really comes because of the way we know in the world. We have an experience, right? So you think of that, oh, this now I'm having an experience of myself. This is me. This is who I am. It's really a shantavritti. And that shantavritti is going to go, and then you think, I have gone. So many questions have been asked of Swamiji. Swamiji would even make fun of the question. It goes something like, in making fun of saying, Swamiji! Sometimes everything's fine and I know myself and then it goes away, Swamiji. What do I do? What should I do? But that experience is the experience of a shantavritti. Because once you know yourself is there no matter what the vritti is. You're the one that's illumining every vritti. So you don't need a shantavritti to be with yourself. You know, shantavritti is nice because it resonates with your nature. But you don't need that for yourself to be self-evident because the self never comes and goes. So once the self is recognized, it's recognized, but there can still, and I think in my case, what it was the thing, is I still had some kind of a relationship with the shantavritti. And when that shift took place, there was no longer any relationship with the shantavritti. And so that peace, when the peaceful vritti is there, I'm there. The peaceful vritti is gone, I'm gone. So when that shift took place, they would say, that's really, even though I thought I knew before, that's when I would say that to me is really knowledge at that point. And that I wouldn't say is like the sunrise. I would say that is like you either know or you don't know. Because it's only one thing. There's not two ways of knowing it. There's not two ways of being it. You know or you don't know. But in relationship to the resolution of the jiva, recognizing that this is only Ishvara, you know, and that you can offer that Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, where you see everything as this body, mind, sense organs is Ishvara, and it's only in relationship to Ishvara, there's nothing but Ishvara. I think that takes a different, it's a different type of progression. So the other to me is more like, you think you know, you think you know, you think you know, you think you know, then you realize you didn't know. but the other one is the clarity keeps increasing and increasing and increasing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You saying something?
Swamiji also used to use the example of the Polaroid photo, how it just the knowledge becomes clearer and clearer and clearer.
I like that too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Polaroid, have you ever seen pull out a Polaroid and there's really nothing there, it's just green and it comes into this beautiful picture. But that's what takes place in time. That vision becoming more and more clear in time. The Katha Upanishad, they didn't have Polaroid cameras, so maybe they'd use that example. They used the sunrise instead. Mm-hmm.
And Jivan Mukti, is that once you know yourself or once the samurai has taken place?
The Jivan Mukti, what they mean by Jivan Mukta, or Jivan Mukti is liberation while liberated. No. what did I just say there? Liberation while living. That you actually gain liberation in this life itself. So Jivan Mukta is one who's liberated while living. They say this knowledge is not something, you know, that you look at it or it's even taught, like, okay, you have this life, you'll get a little bit, but then it might take you hundreds of lives before you gain knowledge. It can be that kind of a teaching, which is not in Vedanta. But in Vedanta, if you're a mumukshu and you have a teacher, you should be able, unless you're very old or something, and you die before you complete the complete gaining clarity, you have this knowledge well here and now. It's not liberation after death, or you're not on a long journey now as a mumukshu, you've come to this teaching, and you know, you have probably 100 or so lives to go. Now, once the mumukshutvam, that state of being desirous of liberation, comes into the psyche, there's enough maturity there, you know, to then gain this knowledge here itself in this life, not later on. That's what the Jivan Mukti, means. Well, what about all these? Sorry, I forgot about them. Go ahead.
So, Radha, you know how we say that the I notion is always taken up by something or landing on something? I take myself to.
On an upadhi, right?
Yeah.
The I notion lands on an upadhi, not just on anything, but on
right.
Something. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sad, rather yeah. Than this and that. So, if I have a nirvikalpa samadhi experience, then the I notion is landing actually on myself. If I'm then meditating on myself?
Oh, well, there's not going to be anybody there, like in deep sleep. You know, there's not going to be any duality there to say, you know, I am.
There's no I notion at all.
No, there's just being. Now, in Satvikalpa, usually also there's no I notion, but there could be.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a subject-object. Usually the mind's too absorbed for that kind of an I notion, but there could be one.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're aware. Is a subject-object relationship, and you'll be identified with the subject. But the thing is, it's not quite the same because the subject-object are one and the same thing. So the only thing that is there is the recognition that that is happening. And that's because the vritti has not been totally overwhelmed. But even there, there's nobody talking, there's nobody saying, there's just your own presence. And in the nirvikalpa, even that the outline of the vritti is not there. So there is no I notion or any notion. There's no duality.
Mm.
Nirvikalpa means free from subject-object. It means free from duality.
Mm.
So there's no... In deep sleep, you can remember, you know, you're free of duality in deep sleep. There's no subject-object relationship. There's no perception of anything.
Mm.
But it's just complete agnanam, like the experience is, oh, when you wake up, you say, oh, I didn't know anything at all. But nirvikalpa... There's no agnanam. There's no ignorance there. There's just the shining of my own being. Right? And when the mind comes back from that non-dual state, you remember clearly. And if this is not a jada samadhi, you also what you recognize is that me is still here right now. That I'm still absolutely present right now. In fact, that was a big realization of Ramana. But I don't have to be in samadhi. I'm never not here. He said something like this, which is kind of an interesting little experiment. Either I am here with my eyes open or with my eyes closed. So if you open your eyes and then close your eyes, nothing happens. Except the colors are gone, right? You open your eyes and know how all of this is here. Close your eyes, you're still exactly the same, but all the colors are gone, right? So imagine now, your eyes are open, your sense organs are open, so the experience of the universe is here. Okay? Now imagine that all the sense organs are closed or the mind is just resolved into the self. You're still here in exactly the same way. It's just there's no experience of the universe. Kind of, you can kind of understand this also, like what is it like when you wake up from a dream? The dream is gone, right? You're still here. Nothing has changed in terms of your own presence, but the dream is gone, right? The only thing is you're waking up into the waking state. Whereas in this situation, your eyes or your sense organs are open, and I am here with this experience. The sense organs are closed, or I'm just with myself, then I am here without this. But there's no shift at all in terms of me. Now, that's true in terms of the whole universe. What to say, what to speak of, in terms of every thought you have or emotion you have this emotion, I am here. You have this emotion, I am here. You have this anandavritti, I am here. Then nothing happens to you. You know? And so that's the tremendous freedom. Nothing covers you. You can be engaged in the samsara and the creation, and there's these difficulties and that difficulty, but yourself is not going through any difficulty. Self is non-dual. You're not becoming hurt or challenged or whatever by whatever the creation is doing, because yourself is non-dual. You're not an object within the dream of this creation, so to speak.
I guess I'm wondering, can the I notion land on the self but not stay there, like in a samikalpa?
Oh, look, we would say more like this. It's not going to be an I notion. That's, I think, why in this Driktrisha Viveka, if it is written by Shankara, it's attributed to Shankara. A lot of things are attributed to Shankara. The little language is a little different than Shankara. So then it's going to be a Shankaracharya anyway, whether it's Shankara or not. I think that's one of the useful things of the way they are dealing with the ahankara in this Driktrisha Viveka, where they're looking at the ahankara as just that natural product. You know, if agnanam, if self-ignorance is there, so the self has not been differentiated, it is very natural that identification is natural. You don't have to work for it, right? Because of the sattva, of the mind, the reflecting capacity of the sattva of the mind and of the sense organs, there becomes an identity between the thoughts and feelings and things that are happening in the mind and consciousness. Right, because consciousness is always reflected there in every single vritti, or manifest there, however, whatever language you want to use. And so that fact, that there's no knowledge, is really the ahankara, because that's what causes me to take myself to be that. Right? So to not take myself to be that, I require viveka, so that I can recognize my being is actually stable, as all of these vrittis and experiences come and go. I'm not coming and going, nor am I being changed or affected by them in any way. I have to see that. To see that, I need a means of knowledge. Because otherwise, I just experience myself from the standpoint of whatever the upadhi happens to be. And I don't have any means of knowledge to stop that identification from taking place. And that's what we call the ahankara. So ahankara means it's the I notion born of self-ignorance. That notion part, the creating of an I, ahankara, from to make or to do, so the creating of an I, making an I, that's what we call the I notion. Right? So I take that to be me, and that's false. Right? So we wouldn't say that the ahankara lands on the self, because there's no ajnanam. If once I know myself, it's not going to be the ahankara. What you recognize is, this is me. The Atma, which is Brahman, is myself, is me. You know, not this body, not this mind, not these sense organs. The fact that it reflects or manifests consciousness is irrelevant. You know, because all of these things are coming and going. They're only reflecting consciousness or manifesting consciousness when they're there. Before and after, they're not. They're not carrying consciousness around with them. They don't carry me around with them. They're an experience that comes and goes. Right? You see what I mean? So you shouldn't say I notion, then I notion landing on the self.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're speaking of ignorance.
Right. So even if there's a samadhi experience of myself, the I emotion is not involved, the I emotion is not there.
No, but you recognize that this is me. When you say I notion, you're talking about ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
You won't say I notion if you're talking about knowledge. Ahankara means ignorance. So it's either self-ignorance or there's knowledge there and now it's mithya.
But now it's meaning if there's not knowledge there.
What?
If there's not knowledge there and there's an experience of me,
then it's going to be ajnanam because you're only going to be identified with the mind that's having that experience.
Right.
Yeah. And you probably wouldn't say that's an experience of me. You'd say that's the big self or something like that because the me is still the mind identified with conscious being because of the sattva in the mind. So you had an experience. You had an experience of God, or you had an experience of the big self, the self that I need to merge into. And we have all different ways and the different ways of people saying and talking about this. But they don't make the shift that that is me. And then what is this? Is that I had this experience and I need to have this experience again. And the more I have this experience, the more enlightened I would be. There's all this kind of hierarchical thinking trying to account for this type of experience. There's no question about the profundity of the experience. It's just that your mind doesn't know quite how to place it, what to do with it. You know, to do different things with it. See, what you're all doing, some of these questions, like there are like five questions in there. Please talk about the difference between viveka and jnanam. I guess being able to discriminate between nitya and anitya is not enough to make this ahankara shift to land on what is nitya. Sometimes we call self-knowledge viveka jnanam, right? Because so much discrimination is involved between the self and what is mithya. But there's so many things to understand, even the relationship between satyam and mithya. We haven't even talked about that in using words. We've talked about it, but we haven't used those words. But there's many things that need to be understood. When we say viveka, in terms of the sadhana chatushtya, you know, the fourfold qualifications for becoming a qualified student, a dikari, viveka is the first one. But there, all viveka means is the discrimination between what is time-bound, anitya, and what is free from time. And for the student, if you become a mumukshu or one desirous of liberation, you recognize that all of this is time-bound and therefore can't give you anything lasting. But you still have to discover what is nitya, what is real. What doesn't come into being and go out of being. And you also have to discover the Satchit Ananda, the relationship of that with Ishvara. So there's a lot more to discover. So now, viveka has to do with the discriminative analysis. So viveka jnanam is that knowledge that involves discriminative analysis. It's viveka jnanam. We also use two terms like jnanam, which just means knowledge, but vijnanam, sometimes if these two words are used together, jnanam and vijnanam. Jnanam means knowledge, understanding, but vijnanam means the actual seeing of something, the recognition. So aparoksha jnanam is vijnanam. Aparoksha jnanam means I have a direct recognition of what the Shastra is talking about. And so if it's used, vijnanam is used along with jnanam. Jnanam just means my understanding of the Shastra. Vijnanam is my actual recognition of what's being said in the Shastra. Shastra means the Upanishads. Okay. I don't know what we're going to do with this pie. You were going to sing bhajans. No, I can't do that. Okay, I'm too tired. So what we're going to do is do these tomorrow and do some budgets right now, okay? Because I would say your questions are really, really excellent. They're really wonderful questions. I think they're great questions. But sometimes after I've talked for too long, I can't answer another question because really. my mind kind of stops. As Rosa knows from my classes. Me having satsang and then I go, I'm sorry. It shut down, everything shut down. I can't do anymore. That's how it is at the moment. Why don't we do it just about 10 minutes? We can do some bhajans. Go ahead. You have to arrange for other people to feel free to do it.
Yes,
you have to ask them.
I told them so.
Yeah, but you have to tell them they have to do it.
Uh-huh.
You have to say, now, tomorrow you're going to do it.
Hari bol, hari bol, hari hari bol.
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 Mukunda Madhava, Govinda bol.
Mukunda Madhava, Govinda bol.
Mukunda Madhava, Govinda bol.
Mukunda Madhava, Govinda bol.
Keshava Madhava, Hari Hari 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 bol. Hari bol, Hari bol, Hari Hari bol.
Mukunda Madhava, Govinda.
Dava
Surarulu
Surarulu
Seridava
Seridava
Tamburi Mitidava
Tamburi
Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo.